And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear here and declare your independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. whatever. What we're going to go ahead and do now is go turn right to Scott Horton, help us understand all that. You know, Bilderberger's going on. I wonder if he has anything to say about that. Scott Horton, Mr. Scott Horton, .com, anti-war radio, tell me everything. Bilderberger, is that something on your radar screen?
Yeah, not so much. First of all, it's .org. .com is the newspaper guy from Oklahoma. Hi, Ernie,
sorry.
How's it going?
ScottHorton.org, sorry. .org.
Bilderberg, it's a big deal. I think, you know, a lot of times what happens is, people sort of project maybe, you know, kookier type theories onto it, and then the whole subject gets kind of tarred, unfortunately, with Illuminati and Satanism and God knows what or whatever. But what it is it's, you know, in a sense, it's like the Council on Foreign Relations writ large, or the Chatham House, the Royal Institute for International Affairs in England writ large. And once a year, it's all basically the most powerful people from the state, not necessarily just the government, but the state, the real networks of power that rule the West, they come together, the Europeans and the Americans. It was invented after World War II, basically as part of the Cold War, to keep the Atlantic Alliance, basically to keep try to keep everybody on the same page. And then, you know, since then, it's sort of like kind of a private, off-the-record G8 meeting, basically, where all these powerful people get up there and give speeches, take notes, have conversations, and try to forge whatever this year's consensus is for what they think is the most important thing to be done. So,
have you heard about this?
Categorize it. You could try to categorize it like, you know, it's the kind of thing you'd see on C-SPAN, only it's not on C-SPAN. Or you could try to categorize it or paint it in, you know, more nefarious terms, but it's clearly unaccountable power. It's decisions being made, really, a consensus being forged without the participation of the people at all. It's you could consider it almost like a shadow Congress for the U.S. and the EU alliance. And when, of course, the whole supposed justification for the superiority of the West is that we're democracies and the people rule. And of course, it's just not true at all.
Nope, not true. There's a news we talked about it in the last hour. We had a Libertarian Youth Caucus thing on. I met at the National Convention. Oh yeah, we'll talk about that. But the big thing was James Corbett picked up on it. It's on Drudge. We kind of started with this early on. They going to be addressing the precariat. You know, those that live in a precarious existence, the people that got the pitchforks and torches, and they perceive it as what's behind, Tea Parties and Trump and all this kind of, they got to address the precariat. And behind this is a book written by a guy named Guy Standing out of the UK that is arguing for a basic income of everybody. And it's just to keep the youth. They have all these things they want to do, but they don't have any money. We turn them into commercial, buy everything, do everything, see everything right now on my app. And they don't have a job or any money. We need to give them some money so they quit rioting. And this is what's going to be the big thing now. What do we do with all these kids with big, giant debts, no job, no money, no hopes, no anything, and they're just, you know, Bernie Sanders supporters or something. So this is a theme that is going to be coming. There's some financial calamity coming, and they always go to war to distract from it or go serve your country and go lose a limb or something. And I'm wondering, when I talk to Scott Horton, all right, what's the next war, man? What do they got that's going to distract us?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's a real problem with the old theory, and that is that the major powers can't go to war with each other anymore without giving up entire cities at a time to hydrogen fusion, right? So the only wars they can really do are, you know, crappy
proxy
little wars like attack Iraq again, that kind of thing. And I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they couldn't screw up and get us into a real war with a real power like Russia or China. But that's the kind of war that it would really take to, you know, start up conscription and do a whole, you know, greatest president in history game and all of that crazy stuff, would be a major power war. And those have basically been off the table since the end of World War II because of atomic power. So,
well, NATO is going up on the border with Russia and thumping the bear on the sternum with a fist. I mean, I'm going, what the hell are they doing?
Well, I mean, they're making money. Basically, they're expanding their power and influence. And I think you and I, we pray that the Russians understand that, come on, we're just BSing to make some money here or whatever, right? We'd like to think there's kind of a secret handshake where, hey, we're going to do the brinksmanship thing, but don't worry, we're just playing. I don't know if they see that. I mean, the Russians' answer was to cut military spending. I mean, they're in a world of hurt because of the oil prices and everything anyway. But they have basically just signaled, we're not playing this game. You know, forget you and your brinksmanship. We're just not doing it. We're cutting defense spending by 2% this year. But it doesn't get through in American public relations. And you're right. I mean, I don't mean to play it down. This could cause a nuclear war. I mean, they're doing a massive, I guess, was last few days, they did a massive war game in Russia, in Eastern Europe. And this is the kind of thing that absolutely could provoke a war. We know from just the history of the last 70 years that we have almost gone to nuclear war over accidents and misunderstandings more than 20 times. In fact, in 1983, there was a massive war game. And it was only because the Soviets had a commie rat spy inside the highest levels of NATO who was able to assure them that, seriously, this is just an exercise. I swear to God, this exercise is not cover for a first strike. Don't panic. I promise. And they said, okay. And they trusted their spy. Otherwise, they were certain that the NATO exercise of 83 was cover for a first strike and Reagan was going to nuke them. And they were going to nuke us. And it was only because they had a spy inside NATO that they were talked out of it. And there's been all kinds of false alarms and close calls. And there's a movie about it. You can get off the Pirate Bay, The Man Who Saved the World, when the Soviet computers told them that five different ICBMs had been launched from California and, you know, were headed to the USSR, and all the protocols said launch nukes in response. And it was one officer's will that just said, no, I do not believe this computer, not until I get different confirmation from different systems. And he just stuck by his guns and saved all of humanity, because if he had said go, no one above him would have contradicted his order.
Okay, now, and who is this?
So this is the fire we're playing with. Literal fusing hydrogen atoms together and causing heat hotter than the sun, killing millions of people in the space of a week. That's the danger that they're playing with their little gamesmanship.
Okay, now, who is this that, you know, didn't follow through, they called it off?
I can't ever remember the guy's name. It's a Russian name, so it's hard for me to memorize.
You know, these...
I'll find it for you during the break.
You know, we're playing this again. I mean, I'm 55. You know, I went through the Moscow Olympic boycott 80 thing. You know, I peak of the Cold War, Red Dawn. I mean, I've been propagandized my whole life. You know, we're just waiting for, living in the shadow of the mushroom clouds, waiting for the hammer to fall. I mean, you know, I gone through this, and I'm wondering the impact it's having on the youth now. You know what? Be afraid. It's always like the fear. Hell, even just commercials for horror movies. You know, that's one thing that when you go to the movies and you see all these, God forbid it be R-rated, you go to the movies and all the trailers and all the, even on cable television of the next horror film, it's just a, just to get you to have, you know, to pluck that fear string just so you even remember it's there. You know, it's like fear is a toxin that they keep pushing into the system here. They need you to even understand fear. It's why when you have young children, you try and make them feel safe, secure, and not afraid. You know, they're not, I don't scare my grandkids. You know, it's just, it puts them into a, you know, you startle them or boo or something like that. But you're not scaring them with crazy stories or movies or something like that. And my kids understand that. They're always making sure I don't. Nah, not that one. We're not watching Predator, you know, at seven, you know, that kind of thing. So, like, you made us watch it. But I'm going, that fear is what they use for something. It warms the fire of whatever the hell it is that they're doing. And I'm wondering what the big fear is now. Is it war? Is it economics? Is it, you know, you're not that afraid of there being a war?
Well, I mean, it's the same damn war we've been fighting for 15 years. And, you know, yeah, I'm worried about it. I'm especially under Hillary Clinton. I think we're going to have a full-scale reinvasion and occupation of Libya. I don't think there's any way around it. I think there's a very good chance that she could invade Syria as well. And, I mean, if the Joint Chiefs tell her, no, damn it, then maybe she'll back down. But otherwise, you know, and you know what? Let me go ahead and say this now, because I don't know if we'll get back to it later in the show. But, or at least let me ask you, beg you to ask me about this later when we're back on the regular segment about this article in the Daily Beast about the CIA and the Pentagon bicker while Russia wipes out U.S.-backed rebels. I mean, this is the kind of thing where if I wasn't reading it from Nancy Youssef, one of the greatest Pentagon reporters in our society, there's just no way you would believe me. It's absolutely insane what's going on. Well, I'll go ahead and tell you. The DOD is saying, we don't want to back Al-Qaeda. The Pentagon is saying, we don't want to back the guys that hit the Pentagon. Damn it. And the CIA is saying, shut up, boo-hoo, they're not Al-Qaeda, they're just Al-Qaeda's best friends, and we like them. So the Pentagon is backing the Kurds who are fighting the Islamic State, but the CIA is still backing Ahrar al-Sham and these other groups who are nothing really but Al-Qaeda Jr. there, who fight all day, every day with, quote-unquote, al-Nusra.
All right, when we come back, you can tell, us all about it, because I, you know, I don't want you to lose all your fire here. You're getting all worked up, man. You're getting to get worked up on the air, buddy.
It's crazy, man.
Well, yeah, I'm, you know,
it sounds like it couldn't possibly be real, but no, really. I mean, the Daily Beast is nothing but Newsweek, and maybe that's not to their credit, but I'm telling you, Nancy Youssef is a good journalist. You know, this is, she doesn't make these kind of mistakes. This is right.
Vasily Arkhipov. Now, I think that's the guy that you're talking about. Donna's got Missile Crichton, the man who saved the world is...
Right. Yeah. I can never say his name. Yes. No, it's Stanislav Petrov is the guy.
Okay, I got the wrong
Stanislav
guy.
Petrov.
Well, you're talking about the 62 one or one another one?
I get him confused now. No, what? I think this was in the 80s.
Okay, well, we'll look for another one.
But anyway, I just sent you the link on Skype to the, the movie on Kick-Ass Torrents. It's called The Man Who Saved the World. Came out in 2014. And it's kind of half documentary, half movie.
All right, here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud?
Oh, hammer to fall. Are you afeared? Are you afeared enough? And it's usually from fear they get you to do all kinds of whatever. But, you know, the logic and reason of what the mission we're supposed to be doing, and you find out the liar. A liar, pants on fire. And Scott wanted me to make sure I brought up, and he got to talk about the Pentagon, the CIA arguing over who's going to get their butt whipped in Syria or something now, and Putin laughing. Well, what's going on, man?
Yeah. Well, and I'm sorry because I'm skipping ahead, but it is tied into Russia, so we can get back to Eastern Europe in a second. But I got to make sure that we have a minute to point out this article here on the show today. It's at the Daily Beast. It came out yesterday. It's called CIA and Pentagon Bicker While Russia Wipes Out U.S.-Backed Rebels. And I will say that, you know, the Daily Beast is run by more or less neocons. I mean, not exactly, but, you know, Michael Weiss is the worst journalist in America right now, and he's over there. And I don't know if it was Nancy Youssef or if it was the editors there who put a little bit of a warmonger spin. If you read it closely, you can tell that there's some warmonger spin on this thing. But the facts are still the facts, and the facts are enough to really blow your mind. And Nancy Youssef is a really kick-ass reporter. Just take my word for that. And anyway, so the article is called CIA and Pentagon Bicker While Russia Wipes Out U.S.-Backed Rebels. Now, even there, the spin is on, oh, they're doing nothing, kind of, you know. They're wasting time while something bad is happening. But that's not really what the article's about. The article is about how the CIA insists on committing on a policy of high treason and backing virtually the same organization that knocked our towers down and killed 3,000 Americans. That's been attacking us since 1993, Al-Qaeda. And the CIA is backing them and their friends. That's the Al-Nusra Front, they're called, in Syria, but also their friends, Ahrar al-Sham and Jaish al-Fatah and whatever these, you know, so-called mythical moderate groups and whatever. And they are basically bin Ladenite jihadists who are fighting against the Assad regime. That is their enemy, the Ba'athist fascist dictatorship there. And meanwhile, the Pentagon, the military, is backing the YPG. Now, they're Kurdish sort of separatists, but they're not really at war against Assad. They don't want to see Assad fall. They're not really fighting for him. They're busy fighting against the Islamic State, who is also Assad's enemy. And, you know, their future and their future relationship with Assad is very much in the air now. But they are also enemies with these jihadists. And so the Pentagon is upset because the CIA-backed jihadists keep attacking and vice versa, I guess, too, the YPG Kurds that the Pentagon's backing. And so now the Russians are saying, we don't differentiate between the al-Nusra Front or these groups that are with them, because what's to differentiate? And the Russians are bombing the hell out of them in Aleppo. And in fact, Moon of Alabama has an entry from that's a great blog. I hope your audience will bookmark it, Moon of Alabama. They do some really great analysis there. And they talked about how the whole reason that we even have this big battle in Aleppo going on right now in the first place is because America's doubled down their support for these jihadists in order to divert Assad back to Aleppo when his forces, backed by the Russians, were racing toward Raqqa, which is the capital of the Islamic State in what we used to call Eastern Syria. I hope you're with me here. The Russians and the Assad government were headed toward the capital of the Islamic State to sack it. So America doubled down its support for the other jihadists in Aleppo in order to divert them. Now Russia starts bombing those jihadists. The CIA is crying boo-hoo. And the Pentagon is saying, hey, the Russians kind of got a point. These guys are Al-Qaeda. Which, you know, the average American in Phoenix, Arizona might think that, hey, someone waving a flag that says I'm Al-Qaeda on it is signing their own death warrant, right? And what are you doing? But these are the guys our government is backing right now. And I want to hasten to point out, I'm not a right-wing kook. And this is not because Obama is a Kenyan-born secret Muslim, any of this crap. It's because Obama is Ronald Reagan. Obama is a conservative, so-called neoliberal, nationalist, imperialist. And He's using the Mujahideen to do his dirty work. The very same as Ronald Reagan did, the very same as Bill Clinton did when it came to Bosnia, Chechnya, and even Libya back in the 1990s. Okay, so that's what's going on here. It's the American Empire. It's not that Obama is an Islamist, that kind of silly conspiracy stuff. It's, again, just straight up power politics. As Obama explained to Jeffrey Goldberg in The Atlantic in 2012, Goldberg said, "Hey, getting rid of Assad would be a great way to take Iran down a peg, don't you think, Mr. President?" And Obama said, "That's right, Jeffrey Goldberg. Regime change in Damascus would be a great way to bring Iran down a peg by separating them from their last allied Arab state, etc., etc." That's what's going on here. And they're willing to go, yes, to the lengths of high treason. Dictionary, constitutional definition, high treason, in order to continue to push for that goal.
Well, how did they get the story out? Who was the leak? What was their source?
Well, I mean, Nancy Youssef has been talking to generals who've been complaining about this, Pentagon sources who've been complaining about this for months. Remember, we talked about this months ago, that the CIA and the DOD are backing factions who are fighting each other in Syria. And this has been going on. And yeah, the generals are pissed. This, you know, I talked to Mark Perry, who's a great Pentagon reporter, who's now writing, I think, for mostly Politico magazine and sometimes for Al Jazeera. And he did a report about Yemen, where, of course, they click their heels and they do what they're told, Ernie. But they're fighting for Al-Qaeda in Yemen for the last year. They've been bombing. Basically, they're the air cover for Al-Qaeda forces fighting against the Houthis, because that's what the Saudis want. And there's a quote of a general, and all the generals are pissed. They keep doing it anyway. But they told Mark Perry, they said, this is a quote of one of the generals talking to Mark Perry. He goes, "John McCain complains that we're flying as Iran's air force in Iraq." Well, that's true. Of course, we have been ever since 03 because of John McCain. But anyway, that's true. But anyway, we are Al-Qaeda's air force in Yemen. What the hell is that? So the military guys, they want war all the time. You know, why not? But they, I think, would prefer to not outright back the guys that hit the Pentagon itself. They would and killed 4,000 Americans in Iraq War II. They would rather fight against those guys forever, not for them, for God's sake.
Well, what I'm looking at is the trigger for all of these circumstances that you describe being used as a justification for something to, you know, shiny objects, distraction over here, shadow of a mushroom cloud. It's going to come in the form of a mushroom cloud, and we're going to... So I'm just kind of trying to piece together all that. What's the biggest threat? Is it, you know, North Korea really enough? Is there something? What? Yeah, when we come back, I want to, you know, all of the... This is just signs of their desperation, of their corruption, you know, and I'm wondering how the other countries outside of NATO are seeing this. You know, the Chinese just get their gold-backed currency. The Russians are just, you know, hunkering down. We're going to wait it out and not do what we did in the Cold War and get sucked into this expense priced out of freaking competition. We're just going to go ahead and upgrade all our goodies and kind of get lean, and we'll wait it out, it seems to me. And then... you got all the NATO countries and European Union and everything. It's just paperwork on top of paperwork on top of agreements on top of, we don't even know who we're fighting. Hell, even the Pentagon and the CIA are duking it out with each other. I mean, this has to fall. It can't keep continuing. There's got to be some house cleaning of something. And I'm just wondering where and how and who. You know, you got a plan?
Yeah, I mean, I think the next big one will be the reinvasion of Iraq. I mean, I don't really know what's going to happen there, man. You know, the Islamic State, it's nothing but Al-Qaeda in Iraq. As George W. Bush put it, this was his one regret of the Iraq War, is that he created Al-Qaeda Plus. Yeah, he gave them a state, basically, for a little while anyway. But remember in 2006 and 2007, the local Iraqi people, they turned on these Al-Qaeda guys and killed them. Because they're not used to living like Saudis, and they don't want to live like Saudis. And... you know, they were just way too big for their britches. Now, the leadership then were mostly Saudis and Egyptians, which made them much more vulnerable to the local population. But the current guys who are ruling them, I mean, and don't get me wrong, just because somebody is a really bad ruler doesn't mean they have a very shaky hold on power. After all, you know, Mao Zedong was the worst ruler ever, and he stayed, you know, he hung on to power until he died of natural causes 30 years later or whatever. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to fall, but they sure don't have any kind of popular support. And the only thing that would make anyone support them is that they are helping to keep the Shiites out, or they're helping to keep the Americans out. So, you know, the worst thing we can do, really, I think, is invade there. But I think that's probably what's going to happen, because I don't think the Shia or the Peshmerga are really going to be able to get rid of them. I mean, even if they sack them out of Fallujah, Raqqa, and Mosul, then what? You know, they're still going to have a huge insurgency on their hands, and they're going to still need the Americans to help them fight it. And what's Obama, Hillary or Trump going to do in a situation like that? I mean, to be honest, maybe I'm wrong, because I thought Obama would have sent 50,000 Marines into Mosul by now, and he hasn't.
Well, it's an election thing. I mean, if they did, that would not go well for the Democrats, you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I thought that, I mean, and that's good news. I thought that the politics of 2014 would dictate that if this guy Baghdadi, who might as well be Osama himself, is up there on a balcony declaring an Islamic state, that politically would be absolutely intolerable. If that fake Islamo-fascist caliphate from George Bush's propaganda actually came true, that they would be able to let that stand? And to me, it's a miracle that they have. I mean, not that, you know, I'm in favor of the Islamic State or whatever. I'm just in favor of the U.S. government not existing anymore, doing anything about anything. But it's basically a miracle that they haven't gone in. They've sent 6,000 special forces in. I mean, that's almost nothing compared to what could be happening right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I want to. Okay, I know what I want to do. We're coming back.
Radio online, FPPradio.com.
You know, all these special forces and troops, they're there.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. You need to go to the archive and get all of Scott Horton just going. He doesn't stop and going. We learn stuff. You know, the one thing that I wanted him to comment on, and that he's already been doing a really good job, is the political aspect of this in an election year here in America. Here we have all of a sudden it comes out with pictures that we got special forces in Syria. And there was a big thing. I remember Anthony Gregory speaking at the Freedom Summit a few years ago when we had it. He made the point that we won. The people, you know, not just no, but hell no. We don't want to go into Syria. We're not going to go into Syria. No Syria. And it was optimistic about, you know, the people rising up enough to delay that. But I was never under the impression that it wasn't going to happen one way or another anyway. So they have, you know, where Pentagon and CIA-backed forces are fighting each other. I mean, you know, how not comical is that? So I'm going, okay, politically, why isn't it, you know, because Scott was anticipating that Obama's going to be sending in a bunch of troops into Iraq. And they, you know, they probably got some a little bit. They didn't get all kind of super invasion of it. They're doing air cover and drone strike, kind of trying to do this, you know, remote war. And then all of a sudden you see special forces in Syria. And I'm going, you know, if they're going to do it or not do it, what's going on? I'm like, well, maybe the Democrats don't see a big flare-up of the war as beneficial to Hillary's election. What about Trump? He keeps talking on about, why are we doing this? We shouldn't do this. And then every other breath, he's like, we got to go in and take all the oil and kick ass. So I don't really know who's on what side of peace. Are they just waiting for their turn or after the election? Explain this to me, Scott. Why do you think it is that we got special forces in Syria, not a full invasion of Iraq again, and you're afraid that Hillary's going to do it? And, you know, give me the dynamic politically.
Man, well, you know, of course, just as you say, it's a complete mess. You know, I guess, as far as I know, it still would take the U.S. Marine Corps to march into Mosul and kick the Islamic State out. I mean, maybe if the Air Force just completely bombs the city off the face of the earth, as they did to Ramadi, you know, that would count a desolation and call it peace, that kind of thing. But otherwise, I don't know if there's really any, you know, forces organized to take it. We talked last time about how the Kurdish Peshmerga, again, backed by American air power, they're on the outskirts of Mosul. That's the second biggest city in Iraq, up there in northern Iraq. You know, I guess I still think that it's going to end up taking, or, you know, I don't know, 6,000, there's 6,000 JSOC, or I don't know, SOCOM and JSOC, first and, that's second and first tier special forces there in Iraq. And then there's another 300 in Syria. And, you know, mostly they're directing air power is what they're doing, although I'm sure there are snipers and, you know, whatever, recon and whatever. Whether that's enough to really oust the Islamic State, I mean, it's possible. Again, we're talking about, it's still just nothing but Al-Qaeda in Iraq, grown up. I mean, they don't have much popular support at all. There are at least rumors of assassinations and insurgency inside Mosul, although I don't know if that's just propaganda or not. As you said, the American people don't want to do this. And politically speaking, I was wrong, right? I thought Obama would be so embarrassed and so criticized by the Republicans for losing Western Iraq to the Islamic State that he would immediately send the Marines. I just didn't think there was any way around it. And instead, he's basically kept on backing the bin Ladenites against Assad in Syria, which undermines the entire war and against the Islamic State. And he's launched an air war against them, but nothing worse than that. Now, whatever Hillary will do and which all sides she'll take on the thing once she comes in, you know, I have no idea. And she may still actually seek regime change in Damascus, which would, of course, be the best thing, the second best thing that ever happened to the Islamic State other than their original creation. And if I can share one more one thing here with you before I finally shut up. In this article that I was talking about here at the Daily Beast, the CIA and the Pentagon bickering about whether to commit high treason on behalf of Al-Qaeda or not. They actually, one of these unnamed goofballs on the CIA side actually of the argument actually gives a statement to Nancy Youssef here, if I could find it. It doesn't really matter. Basically, what he says is, listen, as long as Syria is a failed state, which it is, then that helps the Islamic State. And we'll never be able to get rid of the Islamic State as long as the Ba'athist state is a failed state. So what we got to do is get rid of Assad. Okay, but then it's just like the underpants gnomes. Question mark, question mark, question mark. What's supposed to happen? Who's supposed to become the new non-failed state in place of the Ba'athists that are going to marginalize and keep the Islamic State out? They never explain that part of it.
Well, do they want the Islamic State to take over and they have an excuse to go nuke somebody or something?
I don't think so, man. I don't think it's as coherent as, yeah, and then we'll have the black flag flying over Damascus and then we can really double down the next war. I mean, I really think that they're as dumb as they sound when they say these things.
You know, when you have this big giant immigration flood into Europe, you have all the death, dying, and destruction. You have a first world developed country, you know, that, you know, had like paved streets and everything, and all of a sudden it's rubble. You've destroyed families, and you have all of these refugees, and so I see the perpetuation of war and animosity and hatred, and it seems like that war, good, more food for my family. I mean, it's right. I see that,
yeah, but
mentality.
You know what? It's the same as the war on poverty or anything else, right? You can have, yes, there will be corrupt people on a scheme to make some Section 8 kickback money or whatever it is. But overall, the entire scheme is still a bankrupt scheme. It really can't work. And they all suffer from Hayek's information problem. And they all suffer from Mises' bureaucracy problem and the Peter principle of rising to their level of incompetence. And they all are public choice theory, selfish, self-interested individuals, especially these generals and admirals. All they want is shiny little ribbons and money and palaces and golf courses around the world. You know, they're... so you could, it's easy to like imagine a grand design, and there are some, right? Like, I'm sure there are people in the CIA who are saying, hey, let's figure out ways to stay in Afghanistan so we can make more drug money. But is that the actual policy? Nah, that's just, you know, part of what's going on, if you understand what I mean. And so, you know, it's just like with this. If you follow on Twitter these idiots from the Brookings Institution and whatever, these so-called jihadist experts who all want to back al-Qaeda against the Assad government. If, you know, Charles Lister and these other goofballs on Twitter, if you follow these people on Twitter, they believe what they're saying. They're not part of a scheme to make matters worse so that 7 years from now things will be even worse so that they can make more money then. They actually believe the ridiculous things that they say. That's how they got the job. That's why they get the money. That's how they got hired to be at the Brookings Institution, which is funded by Qatar, is because they believe in the line that Qatar wants towed anyway, right? So it's a damn mess, Ernie, is the point.
When we come back,
I'm not pleading innocence for them. I'm just saying they're as stupid as they are evil.
Well, I'm wondering what the role is that Trump plays in this. And then, of course, we have the Gary Johnson nomination, you know, and see, you know, if that means anything, and Weld, and, you know, who cares? I don't see the presidential election cycle anything but representative of forces doing. I don't understand. You would think I would. You know, I pay attention to this stuff. I have smart guys on like you, you know, to inform people that are telling us, you know, around the world what's happening and economically and war and all that. And you'd think you'd see a pattern or an understanding of something. It's chaos. There's some. I don't understand the role Trump plays in this whole thing and the cabinet picks that he's doing and who's going to be his VP and the Republicans, how they're. There's something weird afoot. Something really, really weird. Maybe Scott can help us out with it. We'll get to the, you know, presidential politics of this, if that gives us any sign of anything, and we'll see. Yeah, the this Ryan thing going on with the Trump deal. You have the picks that he's done. The convention come up. The all his CFR buddies and everything in Goldman Sachs, and the guy I'm going. What is the change? What does he represent? What is it that they're there's something. I don't get it, because he has just as many contacts on the Democrat as the Republican side. And I'm just, you know, and Hillary even still in this thing after all the crap. And they're not even going to release her emails and stuff till after the election. What the hell is that going to do? There's something else going on. And I'm wondering what it is. Do you have any idea?
Well, I don't see Trump as a figurehead for some other group of power brokers who are putting him forward as their man.
No, I mean, it's his own power.
He's
group
the black swan in this thing. You know, we're not talking about Jeb Bush here. So, yeah. You know, and he didn't win because he satisfied the power brokers that he could be their guy. What he did was he beat the crap out of all the power brokers' guys. And now he's the one that they have to settle for. I mean, there's enough little D democracy in the American system where a demagogue with $1 billion can actually, you know, steal the nomination away from the oligarchs. I mean,
yeah,
he's really not an oligarch, right? He's a very rich guy, but he's not a guy who's had a big political agenda other than, you know, bribing the right people to make his own money,
yeah.
Right? He's, you know, in his building business or whatever, but it's not like he's an arms industrialist or he's a, you know, a pharmaceutical tycoon on the Medicare dole or anything like that. So, you know, what he represents is himself and his own will to power. That's exactly what he represents. And he represents, you know, kind of an illiterate 75 IQ right-wing nationalism. You know, he's a Pat Buchanan who's never read a word in his life, right? He doesn't know anything. He's never read even Pat. But he more or less is a cranky old white nationalist.
Well, I get the impression that he reads a lot of, you know, the newspapers, this kind of popular news.
I don't even think that.
Crap.
I think he watches TV only. I mean, yeah. They asked him, where do you get all your foreign policy information from? And he said, well, you know, I watch the shows.
God.
And so, yeah, no, he doesn't read at all. It's not that he reads, you know, this publication or that one. He just, I mean, look, if you were him and everybody told you from the time you woke up in the morning till the time you went to bed at night how smart and successful you were or whatever, why would you need to read? You already know everything in the world. You know, that's how people like him are. Unless, I mean, take a look at the counterexample, right? The counterexample is Ron Paul, who is obsessed with knowledge, who does nothing but read. Because he really cares and he really wants to know. But now find me another politician like that in all of D.C. And Trump would just be on the total left end of the bell curve there, where he just has the least access or least curiosity out of any of them. You know? Access to information, I meant to say. He just didn't even look at it. He wouldn't even know. If they asked him the Sarah Palin question, what magazines do you read? What do you read? He would say, oh.
Yeah. You know, when we come back, you know, there's some other campaigns that are coming up. We got McCain, you know, that's still... I don't get the impression that he's going to go to the national convention because he's got, like, some primary trouble. We got a libertarian on the ballot. Dr. Frank is the libertarian on the ballot. I mean, it was like $50,000 of Democrats' money to get him there. But, I mean, you know, they're wanting to, they're serious about the challenge to McCain for them to have a chance in spending money down ticket because the impression is that Hillary is in trouble. They don't think that she's going to be able to beat Trump. And so a lot of these guys are, you know, putting their money in to try and block Trump with, you know, Senate and congressional candidates, and they're working hard on that. And I think McCain feels the burn, and I'm wondering what is going to happen there.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the, I know he's got a kind of Tea Party challenger. I have no idea how much, you know, what the polls say or anything like that. Sure would be great to be rid of John McCain from power in the United States. I mean, his one saving grace is that he's against torture, which isn't that something? That's the only way, ladies and gentlemen, to get a Republican to oppose torture. You got to torture the Republican himself. And then you can get him to say, oh, geez, that might be going a little too far. Other than that, they're torture mongers to a man. But anyway, other than that, that's it. I mean, that's his only mitigating circumstance or whatever. Other than that, he ought to be shot off into space. So I sure hope that the people of Arizona get rid of him for us. I don't know what it would take.
Yeah,
and I don't know whether his opponent's worse. His opponent might be worse for all I know.
Democrat, don't care. You know, I don't care. Yeah, we're back on it. We just yacked it through the break. The big thing is that we have McCain so clearly represents the old mindset of it's just antiquated. You know, it's just getting to where they're not. It's like you can look at the Republican Party and those in power now, and they just freaking don't get it. So they're almost poster children you want to keep around. You know, and it's not that I think anybody's going to be any better. It's just he's such a great example of not. So I'm wondering what the play is. I'm not really seeing the play. It's like, who wants to ride the Titanic to the bottom of the ocean? And I'm like, get off. That's why this Bilderberg thing, this precariat thing, you know, I'm going, yeah, they got to worry about people. They're using cyber currencies. They're too in debt. They can't, you know, get out of their mom's basement. They got all of the student debt and no job. And they're, you know, been commercialized where they want to do stuff and go places. They just can't. So they, you know, they either, barter and trade and do, they're creating their own economy. And it's a generation. It's not even a geographic thing. It's not country. It's not. So I see them losing a lot. And to think that Donald Trump represents that is the his support comes from the older guys that are just pissed, you know, and they're a pox on any of their houses. I don't think they really understand the dynamic and the demographic that's coming up that's going to change everything.
Yeah, I mean, really, the younger ones are leaning towards Sanders and more towards socialism and that kind of thing, who, you know, consider anyone who owns any capital to be hoarding the money and keeping it from everyone else and this kind of, you know, college freshman idiocy.
I don't see that holding long.
You know, but it's the same economic crisis that has the oldsters, as you say, leaning toward Trump. And this is the problem that the Bilderberg types can't get their heads around is – they're so bad at economics. What they have not done is spread free trade and little L liberalism around the world. What they've done is they've spread central banking, boom and bust, corporate, corrupt, cronyism, militarism, and imperialism around the world. And they've turned the right in every society hard in reaction to them. They can't say, yeah, but look at all the wonderful gains, because everybody's saying, I don't have a job. What gains? You pulled the rug out from under me and you called it progress. Now, in fact, there has been huge amounts of progress in terms of the level of poverty on the planet Earth, the number of percentage and raw numbers of people in poverty.
In spite of their activities.
Yeah, I mean, capitalism really has done a lot for humanity, especially just in the last 25 years since the end of communism.
In spite of their managed economy five-year plan.
In spite of everything that these imperialists have done. And, you know, how can they be surprised that people hate them, that right-wing parties are winning across Europe, that this kind of reactionary sentiment that animates the Trump campaign is pulling out ahead here? You know, when they, the fewest with the most power, have been dictating to everyone else and have been failing. Every one of their massive projects have been a failure. The EU is a failure. The war on terror, the war for the Middle East, is a complete and total catastrophe. The boom and the bust cycle is now global in its scope and, you know, biblical in its proportions, really, if you look at what happened in 2008, right? So, and what's still going on. And so, yeah, it's a real crisis. If they ever actually meant what they said, that, hey, all we want to do is spread liberty, well, they'd be winning by now. Everybody adopt the gold standard. Everybody adopt the Bill of Rights. Everybody
it's
adopt
always
the free market, and we'd all be rubbing butts in fields of flowers by now.
It's all a... there is no freedom as a goal. It is managed trade. It is, how can I protect my monopoly? How can I eliminate competition? How can I get the, you know, the precariat on, you know, the grid again and paying their taxes and inside of the, we can do, and that, I tell you, the big push, this term precariat came out of a book, and it's, they want a minimum based wage. They want, you know, got all these robots. Well, gosh darn it, if you're going to have a robot take my job, well, give me a house and a car or something. And this is kind of what they're talking about, a minimum way of living. Like, you get a sea container in Manhattan with a electric bicycle or something. I mean,
well, this was a Milton Friedman thing back in the Nixon years. It's a guaranteed minimum income. The Swiss actually just voted in a referendum to reject a guaranteed minimum income. But yeah, I mean, what you're basically talking about is the government, the proposal would be government's paying people to retire at whatever age they are. You know what I mean? You want to just goof off and spend time with your family? By all means, stop working. Here's money.
But if you riot, if you protest, if you go on the wrong webpage, we'll take it away.
Well, and there's that too, of course.
No, yeah. I mean, that is it. That's going to be the control. It's going to be, yeah, we'll give you all kinds of goodies as long as you're a good slave.
A young black kid on the free lunch program who's being prosecuted for larceny for picking up one of them little pints of milk, which he was entitled to. But he's at a government school. He's got a government cop as a security guard in the lunchroom there. He grabs the milk, which he's entitled to, but the cop doesn't know that. So the cop puts his hands on the kid. So the kid jerks away and says, hey, you're not my dad. You can't put your hands on me. Blam. He's now being prosecuted for larceny because dependence is slavery.
Yep.
And that's the whole thing. If he wasn't dependent on the government to feed him, if he wasn't dependent on the government to educate him, he wouldn't be in the presence of that stinking pig in the first place.
If you aren't, you can't declare your independence if you're dependent. So we need to get independent of these dependences. You know, I understand that.
This is an 11-year-old, by the way. Did I mention that? We're talking about a child. Who's being prosecuted for larceny over a pint of milk that he was, in fact, quote, entitled to.
Well,
sorry.
Why are they still prosecuting him then? Because.
Fun.
Because. Yeah, because. All right. Well, this is, so between now and next week, you know, I don't keep track. I mean, I see the headlines and I go, eh, I'm not polluting my brain. It's like I turn off the TV, close my eyes, put fingers in my ear and go home when they're showing horror flicks or doing it. It's just manipulation. So from your position of the, you know, you do it so I don't have to, where's the next hotspot? What's going on? We got Pentagon versus CIA, but anything else going on?
Well, let's go back to Eastern Europe for a minute. Hillary Clinton, in her foreign policy speech, which was mostly about Trump, she didn't want to talk about herself. She doesn't have much of a record that she wants to cite for anyone. I would just point out that the first words out of her mouth basically were that the threat that Trump supposedly represents is that of less engagement. So because he is such a loudmouth, goofball, whatever you call him, he's on all sides of everything. So she can paint him as an irresponsible hawk and say, yeah, he wants to torture people's little sisters to death and all this stuff. Yeah, he said that because he's insane. But that's not her real problem. And that's not the neocons' real problem. Their real problem, she made very clear, the threat of a less engagement with the world. That means a retrenchment instead of expansion and imperialism. Which, by the way, Trump himself said, we're overextended. This was in his big speech. We're overextended. That's why we need a stronger economy so that we can afford to be overextended better. Right? Didn't say a word about retrenchment whatsoever. Yeah, so no. It's a fake threat anyway. But then Hillary said the Russians are now messing around right on NATO's doorstep.
And of course, we got bases all around Russia.
America has expanded NATO all the way to Russia's border.
No!
And they are really spinning this hard like this is, they are calling it Ronchevist Russia. And they're saying Putin is not some realist Republican. He's a would-be czar
who
wants
to
recreate the Russian Empire and take over the world. And it's a lie. It's just not true.
All right. End of the show. You just keep going. All right. The her thing is that she's advocating her position, vote for me, because I'm going to be a check on Putin?
Absolutely. And she said, oh, yeah, no, if Trump wins, there will be gleeful laughter in the Kremlin and all this kind of, Cold War style scaremongering. And she said repeatedly in that speech that, Trump wants to weaken our alliances. Well, let me tell you something. We need those alliances to keep Russia and China down. And there is just no hiding it whatsoever.
Why do we want to keep them down? What is it that
they're independent. Because they're strong enough to be independent from the American Empire.
So it's an Iran.
That is an intolerable
argument.
Threat.
So it's an Iran argument. Same thing.
That's exactly the same. Exactly.
So it's like if they're not inside our Western banking central club of, then we got to kill them.
That's right. Remember the 90s under Yeltsin? Russia's great.
Oh, man.
And meanwhile, by the way, just for the record here real quick, we're on overtime anyway. The Russians are the ones who saved us from that war in Syria in 2013. They gave Obama his escape because he had stupidly said, oh, I draw a red line. And then when Turkey and al-Nusra did their Sarah and false flag attack, Obama was stuck. And then Putin said, hey, how about I get Assad to give up all of his chemical weapons and in exchange for you not attacking? And Obama took it. Perfect. Perfect. And it worked. They got rid of all the chemical weapons anyway. On the Iran deal, this is Obama's one foreign policy achievement. His entire presidency is the nuclear deal with Iran. Well, guess who helped twist the arms and work with the Americans on that one? I mean, where did the Iranians ship out all their uranium to? Not the USA. They wouldn't be able to do that.
To Russia.
They shipped it to Russia under agreement with Russia. And this is a country who... You know me, I don't like any politician anywhere, but I'm just talking about the difference between reality and the mythology of the rise of Putin, like he's Stalin or Hitler, as Hillary Clinton called him, compared him to Adolf Hitler. And, like he was trying to conquer all of Europe or some kind of thing. And it's just total horse crap. It's just not true.
Well, what is Putin's goal?
Well, he's a nationalist. He's Pat Buchanan, but literate, right? And that's basically what he is. He's a right-wing Republican Russian nationalist who wants to protect, what's left of Russia His only problems with his neighbors is he wants to protect the rights of Russian speakers inside those neighboring countries, which, of course, you know, a lot of Russians were exported to those countries during the days of communism. And so there are questions about, you know, the legality of them keeping their own language, learning their own language in government schools and these kind of things. But nothing to have a war about. Nothing to have a war about. And you look at a map of Europe and you look at Latvia I'm sorry, I'm spacing out. Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia there, the Baltic states, and ask yourself what these countries are doing in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization other than serving as a tripwire for nuclear war, and tell me what you come up with. I mean, because that's the thing right now. Let's pretend that Putin wakes up in a really bad mood. I was wrong about him all along. He really is Hitler, and he decides he's going to invade Lithuania. You and I are pledged to die. You and I are pledged to give up Phoenix, Arizona, and Austin, Texas in a nuclear war with Russia to force them out of Lithuania. Is that insane? As Pat Buchanan says, back in the Cold War, when he was the hardest core Cold Warrior of all, of course, back in the Cold War, we drew the line at the Elbe River halfway across Germany and said, if you come across this line, we'll go to war. Now we have drawn the line at Russia's border. We have drawn the line at Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, and are talking about bringing Ukraine in as well. You see how insane that is? And then to pretend they're messing around on our doorstep? What in the world?
Yeah, that is a mantra that I'm seeing is that, you know, I mean, it literally is the joke. You see the pictures and you go, you know, Russia must hate us, and look how close their country is to all our military bases surrounding them. I mean, that kind of thing. And I'm going, wow, if I was, you know, that happened here, you know, and Ron Paul brought it up in the campaign, too. If we had the Soviet Union on the freaking border, you know, Cuba around the Gulf of Mexico and on the border, you know, Mexico is a satellite, you know, we'd be concerned. So I'm
absolutely. Well, look, if the Russians hired a bunch of right wing, you know, really neo-Nazis to overthrow the government in Ottawa and to install a Russian friendly government in Canada, we would go to war. We would I mean, look at the Cuban Missile Crisis or for a comparison. We would tell the Russians, you either undo what you just did or we are going to kill every last one of you. That would be the ultimatum. That would be Jimmy Carter's freaking ultimatum if they overthrew the government of Canada. Give me a break.
Yeah, if they do it, you know, peacefully, it's going to be hard to, you know, it's not really peaceable, you know, like what they did in Ukraine. It's
right.
I mean,
that's
thuggery,
the comparison
blue,
making with the coup in Ukraine.
Brown
if they
shirt
did that
crap
in Canada, we would go to war. We'd go to war. Obama would go to war. Bush, any president in a year of my lifetime would absolutely go to war.
I am not checking off, you know, the unlikely. I'm not taking off the table the possibility of a thermonuclear cloud. I mean, you know, these guys, one, they're that nuts, and two, they have, you know, the ability, the will, the desire, and the desperation, and I'm just looking for how are they going to trump, all for lack of a better word, all of the, I don't know, the problems. I mean, the economics is just going to rear its head big time. All this stuff that, you know, Ron was warning of, I can see it happening. And, you know, Bilderberger gets up there and they're equating it. Well, yeah, there's all these indices that show that, you know, economically we're all bad, 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 bad. But what we're really worried about is the big mass of a demographic just hitting the streets. And we got to figure out some way to either appease them or distract them or something. There is a battle for that battle to go their way right now. And I'm trying to get a beat on how they're going to contain. I don't think they know. I think that's what they're meeting about. They're asking that very question. What the hell? Hey, I gotta get to my next guest, man. Sorry to leave you on that.
It's great to talk to you, Ernie, as always.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later. Bye.